ओम अज्ञानतिमिरंदस्य ज्ञानांजलाशलाकाय चक्षुर्विन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदि गौरभक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। Yeah, so I was mentioning that this particular verse from the Bhagavatam, Brahma is offering to Krishna. It only, if you read that verse, very interesting point, you'll not see anywhere it is mentioned that a devotee has to perform sadhana, or they have to, I mean, there is no indication of any kind of devotional practice in that verse. It is only mentioning that if you worship the Lord without accepting the suffering as a token reaction of your own karma, and you keep offering your obeisances to the Lord and have the faith that this is my token reaction, then you are eligible to go back to Godhead. So nowhere in the verse there is mention of chanting offensively, chanting without offenses.
The key word was Dayabhak. Yeah. That means you become the rightful inheritor of the position.
Yeah, so Prabhupada does explain this point that you go back to Godhead. In other words, you go back to Godhead just by tolerating the situation, thinking that it is because of my own karmic reaction. Inside the Lord is so merciful that He is giving just a token of that. And then you keep offering obeisances to God and you worship in that mood. So this much more also, if you worship the Lord, you can go back to Godhead. Now, interestingly, there are not just devotees who may follow this particular instruction. In fact, I would say that obviously they may be devotees also to some degree, but not in the sense that the way we are following. We are systematically following in a parampara, and they may not follow that. They may not be connected to parampara. They may not be having a regular sadhana also. But there are many people who have faith in God, and they do believe that whatever is happening is the Lord's mercy, and we should always think that the Lord is given, whatever He's doing, He is doing it for our benefit. And whatever is happening, it is for our good. So in spite of their suffering, they believe in this principle very thoroughly. So this is a very interesting point. Although they may not do sadhana, they may not do bhajan, they may not have a guru, they may not have a parampara, but I have personally witnessed many of these kind of people, they have the faith in the Lord that whatever happens, it's for the good or for the benefit of everyone. They have that kind of faith. So I think there is something more to this. It's not just about being alive in Krishna consciousness. Obviously, when the original commentator of the Bhagavatam, Sridhar Maharaj, is saying, or Sridhar Swami, he's saying that just by being alive in Krishna consciousness, I think that this is probably in context with the devotees who are practicing in a parampara, in a regulated way, in a systematic way. Those who are properly connected to the parampara, they have a guru, and they are following the principles of sadhana bhakti. For them, I think in that particular context, it must have been said. Because otherwise, we see that there are people who have this kind of faith, but they are not, their mentality is more of a karmi. They are behind money, and they always think that money is the ultimate goal of life. So obviously, these kind of people you will find more in the Gujarati community, which I have personally witnessed many times. And probably, some other community also, maybe in South India also, or maybe some other section of community also. But it is important to note that I don't think just by this factor one can go back to Godhead. I think they will definitely have a more favorable situation in the next life. They will have a better opportunity to become devotees. But it's also very important, because we frequently hear about, not like, we have to avoid offenses also. We hear about that. This verse does not talk about offenses. It does not mention anything about offenses. So it is, I think it is assumed, you know, when Brahma is offering and then Acharya is coming commenting on this, it is assumed that you are practicing bhakti according, I mean, in the way it is supposed to be practiced. Like, obviously, you know, without, like for example, you know, many times the Shastra will say that if you do this, like you know, for example, if you live in Jagannath Puri, even if you bow down in Jagannath Puri, you get the benefit of going to Vaikuntha. Or you know, like the demigods from the heavenly planets, when they look at Jagannath Puri, they see that each and every living entity in the dham, they have four hands. And they are all, they all have Vishnu forms. This is what the demigods from the heavenly planet, the sea, the residents of Jagannath Puri, or any particular dham, if you say. So Shastra has a lot of statements like this, which actually gives the, you know, it has to present the ultimate mercy, because that is the glory of that particular characteristics of bhakti, or the limb of bhakti. So any limb of bhakti, it can give, see, it has the potency to give unlimited mercy, and it has unlimited potency also. So in order to establish this fact, any limb of bhakti can give you unlimited mercy, and it can bestow unlimited potency also. Okay, but even though now, because I quoted about the resident of Jagannath Puri, or even if you take a bath in the Ganga, it is said that if you take a bath in the Ganga and you know you come out liberated because all the sinful actions are gone. But Prabhupada does comment on this, and he says that well, you take a bath, come out, and then again go and commit sinful actions. So it is like, you know, the elephant which is trying to take bath in, you know, he will come out of the water and then he will start rolling on the dust. You know, and the entire body of the elephant will be covered with mud. And again he will go to take bath, and again he will come out, and again he will start rolling. So this is called as, you know, sinning and getting liberated again and again. So it's an offense also. Like, you know, we say that chanting Hare Krishna, if you commit sinful activities based on the strength of chanting the holy name, you again incur an offense through that, because you think that the holy name can destroy our sins, that's why you are free to commit more and more sins. So Prabhupada also said that if you have an intention of committing the sin again, then there will be no effect. So that means the effect should be permanent, and that actually means that you must have a desire to stop all these things. So this desire to give up these habits, it's all a matter of free will. Ultimately, everything boils down to free will, finally. So here also we see that, okay, just keep tolerating the situations, you go back to Godhead. But I think we must require some kind of deeper understanding on this. And that's why Maharaj also in the beginning, you know, he said that you have to be attentive while chanting, or at least you must realize that Krishna and Radha are present in the holy name. It should not be a mechanical process. And then he also gave example of one of his god brothers, how he survived the train accident somehow, you know, and then he realized that we are supposed to be more attentive, focused now on the holy name. So we have to think that this is Radha and Krishna. Otherwise, even if you chant the holy name, it is difficult for you to remember the Lord. And maybe it is also natural for us to think of our family members, because we think that probably they will be able to protect us whenever there is a danger or there is some kind of emergency. It's very natural to think of our family members first, because they are the ones who are surrounding us, or they are immediate ones with us, right? So we feel that, okay, probably, you know, the person who is beside me, he will protect me, she will protect me. But yeah, it's a very critical situation, And there is no guarantee that we may be able to remember the Lord. Even in a favorable condition also, like maybe if you are attached more to our family members or other relatives, it is possible, or maybe we are attached to our work or something, whatever it is, it's possible that we may not remember the Lord. You know, one time Banu Maharaj was giving class and someone asked one question to him, and they asked that, Maharaj, it is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita that whoever remembers the Lord at the time of death, they can go back to Godhead. So why not just remember the Lord at the time of death and go back to Godhead? Why do you have to carry out this entire process of sadhana bhakti? And Maharaj gave a wonderful reply. He said that even for a devotee who has been practicing for so many years, let's say if they meet with a ghastly accident, the first thing that will come to our mind, or the entire the focus of all the senses, will probably go to how can I somehow get rid of my pain? Because as soon as you meet with an accident, it's unbearable for you. It's not easy for us to actually forget about the pain and remember the Lord. It's very difficult. The first thing we think of is how to get rid of this pain. So even for a devotee who has been practicing, they may also start thinking about their pain and they may forget the Lord. So Maharaj was saying that it is so easy to remember the Lord. It's not so easy. And so that's why we have, you know, the acharyas and the swamis, they have given us a systematic step-by-step approach. Unless or until you come to the state of bhava and prema, it's very difficult. I mean, asakti is definitely close. It's a very, you can say it's a very deep state that asakti, maybe you can say asakti is a very deep state. Even ruchi is probably a bit, there may be some risk in ruchi. But asakti, I think, beginning from asakti to prema, definitely prema, so then, you know, you are just, I mean, if you attain bhava, you are unaware of the external body. So your entire body is Krishnaized and you are deeply absorbed in the Lord. So then bhava and prema is a very safe stage. So we have to understand that, yes, it is true. It's not so easy to attain the Lord. It is not so easy to go back to God also. And it can only happen with the mercy of devotees like Prabhupada or their representatives. Ultimately, that's the only hope for us, because it is definitely very, very difficult to remember the Lord even when we are in favorable condition. I mean, you know, some devotees may say that, well, yeah, I mean, we can remember the Lord when if you are in favorable condition. If you are not having pain, then it is much easier to remember the Lord. That's true. But who knows? You know, we may get diverted because of some small things also. And if, let's say, we are able to remember the Lord, and just for a few moments our mind is diverted, and that time we pass away. Who knows? So ultimately, the result is completely dependent on the mercy of. That's why I say again and again that the most important factor in Krishna consciousness is how much thoroughly we have pleased the spiritual master. That's the ultimate thing. If you have pleased the spiritual master, and if you remember what Maharaj said, he said very clearly, one devotee asked a question to Maharaj, that Maharaj, what will happen to a devotee if they are suffering, they are in misery, or they are unconscious? What will happen to them because they are not able to remember the Lord during that state? Maharaj said, Maharaj quoted a verse from the Vara Puran, and the Vara Puran, it is mentioned that even if a devotee is not able to remember me at the time of death, I will remember the devotee and take him back to Godhead. So this is how the Lord reciprocates. See, that's why it's very important just to focus on pleasing the spiritual master. That's the only thing that we have to focus. Whether advanced stages will come or not, that's a different thing. But if we focus, the entire goal is to please the spiritual master, then Krishna will definitely, even if you are not qualified, he will take you back to Godhead. Because he will remember you. Because Krishna is, he has declared very clear, boldly, that my devotee will never perish. And those who serve my devotees are greater. than those who worship me directly. So if you please the representative of the spiritual master, or you know their the entire parampara, the gurus in the parampara, definitely Krishna will take us back to Godhead. There is no and this is the reason why I had asked, requested Maharaj to speak on this topic, because see, there are devotees, we have discussed this earlier very elaborately, and there are devotees who are left in so-called apparently unfavorable situations, but we know that they must have got the reservation from the Lord, because they have done wonderful service, they have pleased their spiritual master very deeply. So in spite of their leaving the bodies in some kind of external circumstances, they have probably gone back to Godhead. There's no doubt about that. And there is a possibility that a devotee may be surrounded by other devotees also. But maybe the Lord will probably give that devotee another chance to come and continue. So these are all possibilities. That's why this topic of going back to Godhead is a very relative topic. It is not a black and white topic. I think for each and every devotee, the answer will, you know, change. It will not be the same. And I think, but if you say what is the common answer to this, the answer is just please the spiritual master. That's it. And so if you also remember, when I asked a question to Maharaj about the process of Raganuga with the mercy of Prabhupada, how do we connect both of these things? Because we are not sure, you know, we hear about devotees going back to Godhead, they have gone back to Godhead, they have used that. But what about their Swarupa? What about their connection in the spiritual world? What about the relationship with the Lord? The details of that. So we don't hear about all these things from devotees in ISKCON. Okay, and Maharaj said, so I specifically asked Maharaj that does this happen before they leave the body? Because before leaving, you know, when they are in a good condition, when they are serving and all that, that's absolutely okay. I mean, we don't hear anyone revealing their Swarupa openly, okay. But at least at the time of death, before leaving the body, does it happen like that? So Maharaj said that it may not happen before they pass away, but it will happen after they reach the goal. So now after reaching the goal, I think it has some deeper meaning also. Anyways, we don't want to get into the analysis of that. But one thing we see here is that going back to Godhead is not so easy. It is definitely not easy. And I think if you do some research amongst ISKCON devotees, you will get a variety of answers on this. Okay, and someone will say that, okay, Prabhupada said just 10, 16 rounds, regulative principles, and you go back to Godhead. Someone will say, no, you have to preach also. Someone will say, no, this is a minimum requirement. You know, you have to do a lot of things, other things also. One consistent answer Prabhupada gave is that you give your life to Krishna. This one life you give to Krishna. And that means majority of the time you do service for the Lord. You please the Lord. Okay, that is actually the standard answer that Prabhupada gave. And it's a very general answer. So whoever follows that, they will go back to Godhead. That's a very general answer. But then we see that in Prabhupada's Leela also, there are so many occasions where Prabhupada gave mercy, exceptional mercy also to some devotees. Okay. So it is not necessary that this formula, it's a path, it's a map that can be followed. But ultimately, depending on individual circumstances, I think Krishna will reciprocate accordingly. So what is most important is, as Maharaj also pointed out, that you don't have to worry about that, or you don't have to think about it. The superiors will take care of that. Okay, so basically what I understood is, you just serve Srila Prabhupada. Majority of the time you have to just serve the spiritual master. Or whatever they have given you, you just try to serve them. That's it. So it may be possible that some devotees may get that revelation while living in the material world. because they are satisfied with spiritual master, they may get early revelations, or it's possible that they may get the revelations before passing away, or maybe after passing away. I mean, these are all possibilities. So, you know, another thing I would like to mention is that Giriraj Maharaj, see, now in ISKCON, you have many gurus, many sannyasis, many Prabhupada disciples, and you will see that there is so much variety in all of these disciples of Prabhupada. Certain things, like, you know, what, according to my understanding experience, the detailed information, if you want, you know, some of Prabhupada disciples, they can actually provide you. And some of the Prabhupada disciples will take a very humble stand, and they will not give so much emphasis, or they will not provide a great deal of explanation. They will just comment a few things, and then they will not go ahead. So they will say that, okay, we don't have to be bothered about it, we don't have to be concerned about it. But then there are certain Prabhupada disciples who will probably emphasize on that, and maybe they will give a more clear explanation or more detailed information about it. So these are all, like, you know, varieties. I mean, I think if I consider my Guru Maharaj, if he was there, maybe I wouldn't even have asked him about this question, because Maharaj never speaks about these things. And obviously, I would be fearful to ask him this question, because, you know, as Giriraj Maharaj also explained in the answer, that we cannot jump to Raganuga, and we cannot imitate the Sariyas. We cannot become Sariyas. We should not imitate. So, you know, personally, I feel that it's not the right question for Raghunath Maharaj. Okay, and maybe this is the right question for other Prabhupada disciples. So I think it is also important to understand who, which devotee should be asked which question. That also is very significant. Now, if you ask Bhanu Maharaj, he will give a half-hour class on this. So that's a very, you know, you see a lot of trend between two Godbrothers, a lot of variety. Because Bhanu Maharaj is completely focused on Shastra, and he speaks on Shastra. Giriraj Maharaj is like, you ask him anything about Prabhupada, related to Prabhupada, he will answer you. And you know, Radhanath Maharaj will focus mostly on humility, qualities and all that. So, you know, maybe he must have answered these questions to his senior disciples. But at least in the current time, I think it's, first of all, it's very difficult to get across him. What to speak of, the questioning and all about these things. So even if you, like, have seen that Maharaj will, even, you know, when he's invited for online sessions, like for example, you know, he did give a class on Narasimha Chaturdasi, and he gave a class on Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastime in Jagannath Puri. So if you have heard him recently, you will see that his lectures are quite consistent. The theme is very consistent. He'll speak about leelas, he'll speak about qualities, he'll emphasize on qualities, he'll emphasize on humility. And he will emphasize on Namruchi Vaishnava Seva Jeev there. That's the basic theme Maharaj always gives class on. And so you'll see that, you know, there is a variety of devotees who will speak about different things. Now, if I ask this question to Bhanu Maharaj or to Mahatma Prabhu, I would have got a much greater explanation. So it is all, I think, you know, but still, you know, I wanted to actually understand this connection, that what happens. And I think even if they knew the answer, probably they would not share it. Maybe, you know, probably because of their humility, or because of some kind of genuine reason, they will probably not share it. So, yeah, but I think, so it's important to know to whom you are connected, and what, you know, which devotee will answer what. Personally, talking about me, if you ask me this question, definitely I will answer this. Because I am a person who will, as far as I know about it, and as far as I understand the topic, I will try to definitely answer this question as much as possible. I mean, that's me. You know, so I am very open to questions. I like questions. And I think questioning, obviously, questioning means, you know, it should be relevant questions also. And it should be important questions also. Not that, you know, very, very technical things. I mean, technical things can also be asked. But you know, the more you go technical, the more you realize that you are not able to find answers to these, because there are so many things in the Shastra that you may feel that you are just taking a drop from the ocean. No matter how much you study, no matter how much you read, there is still so many things to be learned from Shastra, so many things to be known from the Shastra. It's a ocean, unlimited ocean, like that. Yeah, anyways, but yeah, these are just some of my thoughts on this. So Swati Madhavi, anything you'd like to mention?
Yeah, I sleep there.
Okay. And Nirvika, did you also feel, anything that you heard from Mara's class that stuck you?
Prabhuji, I couldn't hear the full class. I was able to join only from the Q&A, because before that I had a work call going on. So, but the Q&A session I heard majorly, and that was very nice. Like all the questions that they asked, you know, like about, Hasan Mataji had asked, like about what we should even do as a community for, you know, people who have lifestyle issues, and as well as, you know, for persons who are about, you know, who are like diseased in hospitals and they're all, and even about praying for others. And I know one Mataji, Vishakha Mataji, she said she shared her experience that she chanted Krishna's name, but there was no love. So I found that very, relatable, that maybe because it's ingrained in us so much, we might actually be able to chant Krishna's name, or we might remember, but there might not be love at that time. We might not be calling him out with prema, basically. So she said that she was very lucky that she got another chance. I think that was a very good experience that she shared. The Q&A, I'm sure the class was also very good. Unfortunately, I've not got time to hear it yet, because this whole week I'm very busy. But the Q&A part that I heard was very nice. It answered many questions on its own, like whether we should pray for devotees. And Maharaj also gave a good answer for that. Like the whole Q&A session in general was quite nice.
Yeah. It was definitely good. Regarding the prayer thing, I was also not able to hear completely because I was kind of, my mind was a bit diverted since devotees were sending questions to me, and they were also asking if they can speak. So I was kind of like just looking around from one place to another place, and so I was not able to focus on that, but I will definitely hear that once again. I have heard to some degree, but I will hear it very thoroughly. And about the prayer thing, you know, one more something that I wanted to comment is, I think Maharaj did mention this point that Prabhupada asked the disciples to pray for his health, right? And he also taught them how to pray for him, in what mode and how. Prabhupada said that, okay, you can pray to Krishna that, kindly cure him so that he can preach and he can, something like that he said. That's true. But I think when it comes to prayers from devotees for other devotees, I think, ultimately it's a free will of a devotee. You may definitely pray for the devotees. I think everyone would do that. But finally, the free will is the key. Without accepting, everyone can pray for everyone. But now, why then everyone is not becoming pure devotee? for a simple reason that everyone has a free will. Krishna will not interfere unless or until they receive mercy, causeless mercy or exceptional mercy from a pure devotee. So, otherwise, Krishna will not interfere in anyone's free will. So, the prayer can become effective only when the devotee decides to execute that particular thing. Otherwise, the prayer will not have that meaning. And you cannot expect, like, you know, transformation of heart through a prayer, through someone's prayer. That will never happen. You have to work on your own self. And there is no option for that. Everyone has to work on their own. Prabhupada said, ultimately, one has to fly their own plane. So there is no question of trying to change, transform someone. First of all, we are not in that level of advancement where just by praying for someone, Krishna will bestow his glance upon that person. Okay, we are not in that particular stage where it will happen like that. So basically what we can do is, we can just pray, and ultimately the person who is supposed to execute the instruction, they have to do it on their own. They cannot depend on transformation, you know, I mean some kind of magical transformation to happen. It has to be a personal effort also. So this is, I think, very, that's why I think the devotee also was, the question was related to this, that, you know, why we have to pray for devotees when there is no action? I mean, you know, we say that, okay, we'll pray for you, but then it has to be followed by some kind of execution also. And we have to show that. I mean, so, you know, there are so many examples of Prabhupada and so many advanced Vaishnavas who have gone beyond their comfort zone, they have sacrificed, and they have proven by their example that they really care about someone and they can go to any extent to help a devotee. And there is a, you know, I would like to share something very, very relevant and extremely inspiring about, you know, this, because I just remembered one particular example of His Holiness Raghunath Maharaj, his compassion, his mercy. So see, we say that we just pray for devotees, but Maharaj is a person who will, he means what he says, and he can go to any extent to try to somehow attract the mercy of Krishna so that Krishna can actually, you know, do something for that devotee. You know, this is a very typical example. So I can, you know, I can share that, but I wanted to ask you all, should we continue with our CC class, or should I continue sharing this example?
Continue.
Okay, Swati Mata is saying continue. Rajiv Prabhu, what you said?
I'm fine, Prabhuji, with as whatever you would like to, are inspired at the moment is fine. No problem.
Okay, Nirvika, what about you?
Yeah, Prabhuji, you can continue. I mean, you've already made us a bit like intrigued about this. What is he going to
say? So basically, you are, I think, it's more inspiring to know about what Maharaj did than to reach Chaitanya Prabhupada.
Prabhuji, please don't mention it that way. It's not just me, but
I like to create controversy. So that's why at the right moment I ask this question, that okay, do you want to hear about Maharaj, or do you want to continue with Gauri?
We are serving.
Yeah.
As Lord said, you should serve my servant, right? Rather than serving me. So right now we are doing that.
Yeah. Yeah, so anyways, personally, this has been, I think, this is the most this is my most favorite Leela of Maharaj, you can say pastime of Maharaj, or you know, his sacrifice and surrender, like his level of commitment, you know, as a guru. So this is the best example of a guru-disciple relationship. I mean, till now I have not heard anything about like this. So maybe there may be other examples also, but I mean, I heard this, like, you know, for the first time, and I was stunned. I think everyone of you knows Anand Vrindavan Prabhu. Maybe not Swati Mataji. Probably she must have seen the video of Anand Vrindavan Prabhu, or not. I don't know that, but at least Rajiv Prabhu and Yazika, they know Anand Vrindavan Prabhu. And he is our godbrother, senior godbrother, a senior disciple of Maharaj also. And Maharaj has given him a lot of affection. I mean, you cannot even think how much affection he has got from Maharaj, how much Maharaj has extended himself for him. I mean, sometimes, you know, we feel envious that we are not getting that kind of affection. But so he is extremely, you know, fortunate to have received that kind of affection from Maharaj. And so, that, you know, this is during his time of when he was a stock broker. He was into the stock market. And there was a phase in his life where he had almost collapsed. Nothing was left, and he was kind of bankrupt, you know, because of the stock market crash that happened a long time ago. So he was extremely worried about it, and he had taken some debt from some of the people. And I think he had a tie-up with one of his, he was in partnership with one of the companies. So the deal was that whatever losses the company will bear, Anand Vrindavan Prabhu is also supposed to bear that loss equally. And whatever profit they will bear, he will also get the same profit, percentage of profit. So that was the deal that time. And so Anand Vrindavan Prabhu was very worried that this particular phase has come, and now I don't have any option, but I have to sell my house. So then, you know, this thing was brought up to Maharaj. Like somehow Maharaj came to know about it. then Anand Vrindavan Prabhu first shared this with Maharaj. So Maharaj said that you are a rascal, you are a fool. How can you go to such an extent that you sell your house? You know, you should not do like this. This is not the way. So Maharaj was, he very heavily chastised him, and he told him that at least think of your wife. And, you know, you and what actually he was thinking to sell the flat, and he was planning to shift in the temple. And then he, as you must be knowing, that he is a very calculative person in terms of how to save money, how to live a simple life and all that. So he had already made those plans, thinking that in the worst case, I have to sell my house and I will probably shift in the temple. And, you know, he also had thought about what services he will be doing in the temple and what services Mataji will be doing in the temple. So that way they can at least... So he's a man of principle, basically, okay? And his thoughts were that in no situation, no condition, I will ever try to enjoy on someone else's money. Okay, whatever debt I have taken, I will repay back every single penny. And obviously, this is a characteristics of a devotee also, that a devotee can never enjoy life based on anyone's money, right? So it's a natural thing. So any person who has got this moral and principle, they will definitely do anything to get rid of this. So he was in that kind of mentality that, okay, I will just sell my house and I will live in the temple. So then, when he was discussing with Maharaj, Maharaj immediately called Rishikesh Mafatlal and Narendra Desai, who is Srinathji Prabhu. So he immediately called them, and he told Anand Prabhu that, you know, see, these are very well established people, devotees, in their material life, and they are also very nice devotees in the spiritual life also. So you take guidance from them, and you ask them that if you are in such a situation, will they advise you to give up your flat and live in the temple? And both of them, they spoke to Anandananda Prabhu and they told him that no, you cannot do like this. So we will come up with some plan. You know, Maharaj told him that you cannot sell your flat. And you know what he told Anandananda Prabhu? He said that you go right away, you take everything, you know, and if actually what had happened is Anandananda Prabhu already had sold the flat to someone. And so it was, I think, a period of like maybe after a few weeks that a person was going to come and he was going to take over. So then what happened? Maharaj, whenever Anandananda Prabhu's wife, she visited temple, Maharaj was making sure each and every single day Maharaj spoke to her and asked her about the status of his decision. Actually, Maharaj told him that you don't worry about it and you don't sell the house. And just, you know, like focus on your spiritual life. So then Maharaj was inquiring regularly, consistently about what decision he took. Because Maharaj, if somehow he convinced him, we should not sell the house. Anandananda, in the beginning, see, obviously in the beginning, a disciple will be a bit hesitant to follow certain things of the spiritual master because there is a lack of faith. To some degree, there is a lack of faith, even if someone has taken initiation. But it is not so easy to completely surrender. It will take time. So he was thinking that, maybe Maharaj is not able to understand my situation, my position, my status in society. And another thing is that in the stock market, you have to be very honest. If you try to cheat people, then it will spoil your image. You cannot enter into the stock market because people, they have to be very honest about. Then only they will come to you and they will seek your advice. So this is what I mean he was sharing. So he was thinking from all angles that if I have to secure my position status in society, I have to definitely sell it. But somehow Maharaj was, you know, behind him that you are not going to do this. So then what happened is you cannot believe this, what Maharaj did. So the time came, it was, you know, the time came when that person was going to, you know, he visited his house and he was just about to take over. I mean, this is like a few days ago, couple of days ago. You cannot believe this. When Mataji went to meet Maharaj, and she shared that, okay, this person is going to just, you know, arrive in 1 or 2 days now. And so I think maybe we have to sell the house. You know, Maharaj, he packed up everything, all his luggage and everything. You know, whatever is sannyas clothes and whatever it is, he packed the entire luggage. He said, right now I am leaving with you and I am going to your house. And I will stand at the door and I will see how this person comes and takes away your house. Such a amazing, you know, like you just see the dedication of a guru for a disciple. What kind of commitment, what level, what, you know, to how much a guru can actually go, how much he can extend himself. That is actually clearly shown by this example. So Maharaj was all, you know, he was all set. He was all set to go to his house and he was personally going to defend and he was going to not allow that person to take over. Okay, he was ready for that. But and Maharaj also told Mataji that since so many days I have not been able to sleep well because I'm just thinking about you guys. I have been deeply thinking about you, and I have been chanting intensely for you both. Okay, so when Maharaj was prepared to leave the temple and shift to their house, so, you know, and obviously then what do you expect? Some kind of miracle will happen. So exactly that happened. Anand Vrindavan Prabhu, the person who was going to take over his house, he came and he told him that actually somehow, you know, I think I will not require this because I have found another house. And so I'm not going to take it over now. And Anand Vrindavan Prabhu was shocked. You know, the exact story I don't remember, because this is something I had heard almost 2 months ago. But just to make it brief, some kind of miracle happened. The person didn't take over. And in fact, he told Anand Vrindavan Prabhu that I appreciate your honesty and all. But I won't be able to take the house now. So Anand Vrindavan Prabhu did not have to sell the house. On the top of that, so, you know, he communicated to Maharaj that, Maharaj, this is what happened, you know, by your interference, by your mercy, supreme mercy. You know, I don't have to sell the house now. And you don't have to come here. You know, he was also shocked that how can a guru take such a, you know, extensive stand just to support his disciple. To what level the guru can go, that is clear from this pastime. Okay, so now Anand Prabhu, he went and he met Maharaj, and then Maharaj told him that you do one thing. You go to your partner and you tell him very clearly that this is the deal. Okay, you have to change the deal now. And you tell him one thing very clearly, that you see, your partner, he has a big company, but you don't have any company as such. You are alone and you have responsibilities. So tomorrow, if you are going to bear the loss, you will lose everything. They will not lose anything because they are a big company. So you go and tell your partner that the new deal is that when there is a loss, I won't be involved in that. I won't bear any loss. But when there is a profit, you have to give me equal share. So the first response or the reaction of Anand Ram Prabhu was that, is Maharaj making a reasonable suggestion? I mean, does it really make sense? What kind of suggestion is this? He thought it to be a very weird suggestion, because anyone is going to see one's profit. The first thing that anyone would like to see is one's profit. Okay. So the first instant reaction was, Maharaj, what are you talking about? They will not listen, you know, they are not going to agree on this. I mean, I think, yeah, and another thing is that one thing, Anand Vrindavan Prabhu had already decided that he will break up this partnership. Okay, because he was afraid that in the future also similar circumstances may come up, then what will happen? So then he decided that he will break up this partnership. And after that, he went to Maharaj and then he told him that, Maharaj, I'm thinking of breaking these partnerships. But Maharaj suggested him like this. Okay. And he told him that, tell them, go and tell them, this is a new deal. This is what my demand is. If you can accept, then fine. Otherwise, I'm leaving the company. Okay. So then obviously, for Prabhu to digest this was a big thing. But still, you know, he thought that, okay, let me try. You know, anyways, Guru Maharaj is saying, so there must be some, truth in the words of the Guru. So let me try this. So he went, he called that partner, and he told him what Maharaj said. So this partner, you know, he was a bit surprised to hear about this. But he said that, okay, let me discuss with my colleagues. And I'll revert you back in 2 or 3 days. Fine. Said, okay, no problem. So he made it very clear that I am not going to bear any loss and the profit will be shared. And if you accept it, then fine. Otherwise, I'm leaving. Okay. So then, after a few days, the partner called up and he told him that whatever you said, we are accepting that. We are fine with it. You just don't leave us like that. So then Ananda Prabhu got another level of faith in Maharaj. And he was very happy, and the way situation turned around, it was magical, right? And then he, you know, immediately went to Maharaj, he told him, and then Maharaj started laughing in his traditional style. And he said, "You are a fool, you don't know what is your value." And he actually taught him his value, because Anand Vrindavan has 7 degrees related to stock area, and he's got a gold medal from London Chamber of Commerce. And he's got a great amount of experience in stock market. So then Maharaj told him that, "You fool, you don't know your value. If you knew your value, you could have changed things before only." So then, this is what Ananda Prabhu shares in one of his Vyas Puja offering. And it was so striking, you know. It was really very inspiring example of how a guru can actually reciprocate with the disciple's love. Yeah, so this is a story. Yeah, so what do you think?
Ashwinadam Prabhu is very, very lucky.
Yeah, of course. And in that way, many of the senior disciples of Maharaj, they are extremely fortunate. This kind of involvement, this kind of interference, rarely we have heard from a guru for a disciple. And I think this type of interference has come because Ananda Prabhu has surrendered to Maharaj in that respect. So here, there is another important lesson to be learned, that the spiritual master is not just, sometimes he may also interfere in your material life and give you suggestions so that you may improve, you may realize your value, you may also channelize your material life in Krishna service. So it's not necessary that if the spiritual master is interfering in someone's material life, it's not necessary that, sometimes he can be open also about it. Generally, a spiritual master guru will not interfere with a disciple's material wealth and all, right? They will not be concerned about that. But here we see that this is one of the examples. In fact, in many other examples, Maharaj has led, he has directed many Grihasthas to channelize their Lakshmi also. And he has guided them how to use, where to use, when to use. So, it's all about having faithful relationship with the spiritual master, and then we can actually see the results. So here, Maharaj invested so much of his affection, care, and time for this disciple because he knew that Ananda Prabhu is someone who is also surrendering. He is like, although initially he may have shown hesitancy, but finally he did accept whatever Maharaj said because he developed that faith over a period of time. And so we can actually understand that how the spiritual master is the best friend, not just the best friend, but the best family member also. Even a father would, now in contrast with Ananda Vrindavan Prabhu's father, his father kicked him out of the house. So one father is kicking him out of the house, another father is leaving the temple and going to his house. So we can see this contrast. How a spiritual master is sacrificing so much for the disciple. Whereas it should be the other way around. The disciple is supposed to sacrifice for the spiritual master. But here we see Maharaj's unique example that he can do anything for the disciples. So we don't know what Maharaj is praying for each and every devotee, every disciple, how much he actually means when he's saying something. Like even for example, Madhura. Nirvika, you know Madhura. So I will share one thing about Madhura also, that Maharaj told her personally her match was fixed with Saurabh Prabhu. Okay, that time when she informed Maharaj, Maharaj became so happy. He told her that I have been praying for you since a long time and now see the result. Every day I have been praying for you and now see the result. So can you imagine, you know, just for some devotee like Madhura, Maharaj is also bothered and concerned so much. So we don't know, you know, we think that, okay, he's only concerned about bigger things or bigger responsibilities. But no, the pure devotees, they are very particular in small things also. And if they love someone, they love them eternally. There is no question of, temporary love, like, you know, the way we have feelings for someone. Depending on situation, circumstances, our love and affection for someone will keep changing with time. So these are actually pure devotees. They are steady in their behavior, consistency, everything. Whatever they are doing, they are always consistent. So this is a typical example. So what do you think, Rajiv Prabhu and Swati Mataji? Any comments?
Yeah, it's a very wonderful, Prabhuji. Because usually we hear that a disciple is showing his sincerity to the spiritual master by surrendering. But I didn't know that even the spiritual master can. It's very nice. Thank you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes,
Prabhu. Yeah, Rajiv Prabhu.
Yes, Prabhu.
Any comments?
Yes, Prabhu. Yes. She's very not something that happens every day, but surely the commitment of disciples to Guru is. Has been very wonderfully reciprocated by the Lord. And that too, a personality like Maharaj takes such personal interest for us. To be able to give that kind of attention and to one devotee, Maharaj doesn't forget when this is the time that is required. He will stand up and offer all that support, moral support, spiritual support.
Yeah.
So that one-to-one reciprocation. Only Krishna is represented, no? That's the real example of being Krishna representative of Guru.
Yeah. And I think, it's also important to understand that Maharaj, I would probably say that for every disciple of Maharaj who is serving Maharaj or connected to Prabhupada's movement, and if they are serving very faithfully, very deeply, following all the instructions of Maharaj, I'm pretty sure that Maharaj reciprocates in that way to all the disciples. So here, obviously, we see there is a more physical contact. There is a more appearance of Vapu form of Guru Maharaj, but in the same manner, Maharaj will also reciprocate with other disciples. Now, this resurrection may not be in the Vapu form, but certainly it will be resurrected from the Lord. And it can be in the form of dreams, it can be in the form of realizations, instant realizations, or it can be felt in the, like, you know, whenever you hear the spiritual master, you can actually make a connection and you can feel that the spiritual master is directly instructing you. Many times it can happen like that. Yeah, because technically Vani is actually more important than Vapu. So even though Maharaj has definitely shown lot of care, concern, affection to his senior most disciples, but I would also say, I would also add that it's not just limited to the Vapu experience. The Vani will actually precede over the Vapu and will reciprocate more than the Vapu presence. So, it all depends on following the instruction of the spiritual master ultimately. So the spiritual master may reciprocate with someone very intimately. It's not necessary that the person has to have the surrender attitude also. It's not necessary. Like, for example, when Prabhupada or any other leader, they go for preaching, then they come in contact with so many non-devotees, materialistic people. And especially if they are very influential in their position, then these great Vaishnavas, they will show a lot of affection to them. Even there, they may not be able to surrender to him completely, but they show that affection to them also. So definitely, the more you surrender, the more the guru will reciprocate in a guru-disciple relationship. But even a guru is a person and he may have choice. So he may reciprocate with someone. He may also show his affection to someone. So that is true. But ultimately, if we are connected with the guru through the Vani, then we will also experience the same kind of reciprocation. There is no doubt about it. In fact, Maharaj has also mentioned this point, that I think when he was in Tirupati temple one time, Tirupati Balaji, so one time one of the devotees or his godbrother asked him that, like Maharaj was intensely chanting and he was praying to Balaji. And someone came and someone asked Maharaj that, Maharaj, what are you praying so intensely? And Maharaj said that, I am praying that each and every one of my disciples go back to Godhead in this life. I am praying for that. We cannot understand these crucial aspects of Guru Tattva. So here we can see that Maharaj is definitely concerned for each and every disciple. So we may be separated by distance, but definitely the fact that he has accepted us, he is definitely trying to deliver us all at the feet of Krishna. In another instance, when Maharaj was in Jagannath Puri during the Rath Yatra time, so Maharaj, if you remember, we can go to the Rath, we can climb the Rath and we can embrace Jagannath, Baldev, Subhadra. This has stopped in the last, 4 years back, this has stopped. Now it is not, we are not allowing to climb on the Rath and embrace the Lord. But before that it was allowed. So, one time Maharaj embraced Jagannath and he was for a long time he was embracing Jagannath. And then some disciple asked Maharaj that, Maharaj, you spent a long time embracing Lord Jagannath. What were you praying or what were you offering to Jagannath? Maharaj was praying that each and every disciple of his may get attracted to Jagannath, may get the mercy of Jagannath, they may get attached to Lord Jagannath. So we never know, whatever attachment, whatever advancement we are making, it's only because of prayers of pure devotees like Maharaj and others, right? Okay. When they pray, then we get more, we develop more attachment for the Dham, we develop more attachment for the Holy Name. And see, that's why I've mentioned this point, that this surrender to the Guru or to the central point of our spiritual life must be the spiritual master, because this is the foundation. If the foundation is strong, then other things, the taste in other things will also develop automatically. In the chanting the Holy Name, attachment to the Dham, attachment to the hearing Katha, pastime, Leela, whatever it is, whichever limb of attachment to the deities, everything will intensify if we keep the Guru in center. If we keep the Guru as our first priority, everything else will happen automatically. So we don't know what is happening internally, what is happening between the Guru and the Lord, what they are discussing, you know, we don't know that. But one thing is very clear, that just like as we are hankering for the association of Guru Maharaj, or to hanker, you know, to serve him, so similarly he is also hankering to bestow his mercy. Now that mercy may not necessarily be in the form of Vapu, in the external form, because Guru also knows that the external form is actually external. So the real mercy of a Guru comes when the disciples, they get connected to Krishna in a very strong way. They realize the purpose of the Shastras, as I mentioned in the Upanishad, that you must have implicit faith in the spiritual master and the Lord simultaneously. Then only you can understand the purpose of the Vedas. Okay, so the hidden meaning of the Vedas will be revealed to us when spiritual master is the center. And all these things will come to us. And this is the real mercy. The mercy is not of how much spiritual master gave us time, how much affection, you know, by how much he glanced on us, how many times he glanced on us, how many times he smiled, smiled, and how many times he gave us the Maha Garland or Maha Prasad or whatever. That's not, that definitely it is one of the elements of bhakti, that it should help us. But unless and until we accept that and we follow the instructions, nothing is going to work on its own. So after the instructions of the spiritual master, when we start executing those instructions, then the spiritual master will start connecting us with the Lord more deeply. He will start connecting us to the Dham. He will start connecting us to the Holy Name. And our attachment intensity will also increase. So that, we say that quality is the most important. So the quality will actually come. So initially the quantity is there, but then later on the quality will manifest. Yeah, so this is the most important principle of spiritual life. Yeah, okay. So whatever we have discussed till now, any comments or questions? And I don't remember why I shared the pastime of Maharaj. Maybe I was trying to make a point that how much a spiritual master can extend himself for a disciple. Maybe that point came up. But I don't remember in what context I was saying that. Anyone remembers, like, why I shared this? So I'm not able to hear you. Sorry, your voice is not clear. Yeah, I'm not able to hear clearly.
Okay, would you know?
Now better.
No. Yeah, initially you were on the point, Pramji, were discussing that why just by being alive in the Krishna consciousness, one will go back home. But that is where you had started off. And from there, you...
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anand Vrindavan Das Guruji and Maharaj.
So it's not clear. Actually, I'm not able to clearly, some words I'm able to hear, but I think it's not breaking, but I think it's not clear only.
Hello?
Yeah.
Now? Now you can hear?
Yeah, now it is clear, yeah.
Yeah, I said you were initially on that point that how a devotee has just simply to be alive in Krishna consciousness, and by simply by being alive, he can get the mercy of the Lord. And from there, you came to Anand Vrindavan Das Prabhuji and how Maharaj. But I don't know how you came to this point that you don't remember, but in
correct.
Sequence somehow you had come.
Maybe there was a context of the guru, what he does for the disciple. Maybe that context came, and then I started. I quoted this example, but in what context I mentioned that I also I'm not able to recollect. I know
one,
obviously I started with.
Just one perspective, Prabhuji, that you said that even if the devotee is not perfect, but if he's simply alive in Krishna consciousness, he can earn the mercy of the Lord, correct? So that you said was a little, you thought it was slightly controversial, or maybe there was something more to it, you were saying, right?
Yeah.
So, can it be compared to maybe like a mother has so many children, some of them are very bright, but some of them are not very very bright, or they might be slightly dull, but as long as they look up to the mother will never abandon or never leave the child. The mother will always reciprocate to the fullest, because ultimately the child has to simply look up to the mother, and the mother will make sure that she does the best for the child. So in maybe to certain extent that may apply here also, that if even if one is
that's a very good example. What you are saying definitely is again connected to what I was saying, that see, ultimately, in any case, now obviously, you may stay alive in the process, and then you can inherit the property. But when you will inherit the property, that's a question. Okay, so I think that will depend on the Supreme Lord to decide when he wants us to inherit the property. He may want us to come back for further clarification, or he may want us to become more perfect in our relationship with him. And so accordingly, he may, but the fact that we are being alive in Krishna consciousness, we will be entitled to inherit the property. When? That's a question mark. And as you said, you know, you gave the example of mother or a father. We look up to them, or we are just holding them. So I see that in terms of the spiritual master, that, you know, because we don't have a direct access to Krishna, so we catch hold of the spiritual master. We just faithfully execute the instruction of spiritual master, and if he wants or if he bestows mercy, then we can go back to God in spite of our disqualifications. So there is no doubt about that. In fact, I did also mention certain important points that Prabhupada also made some exceptions, and he bestowed that kind of mercy to others, probably those who are not traditionally following the Krishna conscious way of executing bhakti. So Prabhupada granted them that kind of benediction that, you know, they can go back to Godhead. So it's not necessary they may execute the sadhana process, because then they become Kripa Siddhas. Now in our case, we are a mixture of both of them. Although I would say that more Kripa Siddha than sadhana Siddha, because the type of sadhana we are doing, it's a very low level of sadhana. Okay, or maybe you can say that very low absorption in our in Krishna consciousness. It's a low level of absorption. So even though we may do in terms of quantity, but in terms of quality, probably we are at a much slower stage. Our absorption is also quite low, and we are distracted also a lot. So that's why I feel that we are more on the Kripa Siddha side than on the Sadhana Siddha side, although we are a mixture of both. So it is ultimately up to the spiritual master. That's why I said very clearly that if the spiritual master is pleased sufficiently, and if the spiritual master wants you to go back to Godhead, then you will go back to Godhead. Now, there are certain cases where it's not necessary always that the spiritual master would want a disciple to go back to Godhead. He may want the disciple to come back in another life because maybe he has to execute some important service, or the spiritual master feels that he requires more purification, or the desire, the intensity of his longing for the Lord should be increased. So the spiritual master may want the disciple to, or maybe the disciple himself would desire like that. Okay, the disciple probably, so now there may be circumstances where devotees may be at the state of bhava, but they still cannot go back to Godhead probably. And there may be circumstances where devotees may be at the state of ruchi, or at least at the state of nishta, and they may go back to Godhead. That is also possible. Now, you would probably question how it is possible. Someone is at a higher stage and he cannot go back to Godhead. It is possible in the sense that the bhava bhakta, maybe the Lord wants him to do some wonderful service in the next life. Or maybe the Lord wants that his intensity of longing would increase in the next life. Okay, and someone at the state of nishta bhakti, maybe, what he has done, that's finished. The Lord wants him to go back to Godhead. So he can go back to Godhead. Whatever he needs or requires, that is probably made available to him before he passes away. So he can go back to Godhead. Because in Shastra also we have these kind of examples where devotees from Bhava Bhakta stage, they have fallen down and then they have got another lifetime, and then after that they have gone back to Godhead. Whereas we have seen there are Kripasids that they have not done sadhana and they have gone back to Godhead. Right, so we have all kind of examples, and it's it is like case to case basis, I think.
Correct, Prabhuji. Correct.
Yeah, I specifically commented on this point because in the beginning Maharaj said that we have to be very attentive, and you have to chant with love. You cannot do it mechanically. Okay, so that was the point, that some certain specific details are required. You cannot just say that, okay, you are at the state of Shraddha, even at the state of Shraddha also devotees are chanting. Or at the state of Sadhu Sangha and Bhajana Kriya, they are probably chanting 16 rounds also. Technically, Nishtha will come when Anartha Nivritti will happen. So devotees at the state of Bhajana Kriya and at the state of Nishtha are also chanting 16 rounds. But there is a difference in quality now. And maybe they are more focused, they are more absorbed at the state of Nishtha than at Bhajana Kriya. So definitely there is a difference. And obviously there is a huge difference if you consider between Bhajana Kriya and the state of Bhava Bhakti or Prem Bhakti. So now, you say that, okay, anyone who is staying alive, devotee at the state of Nishtha will stay alive because he has reached this platform of steadiness. And the devotee at the state of Bhava and Prema, definitely they more beyond that, they will, more than that, they will be alive. So now to say that, okay, both of them will go back to Godhead, in one sense, it's a sign of inequality. You may think that this is not justified because I have put so much effort. I mean, obviously, I'm just giving some kind of, relatable analogy from the material world. It's not definitely, Prem Bhakta definitely sees everyone else as a more for much advanced devotee. But, from an external point of view, it seems that why this inequality or injustice is there. That one devotee is putting so much effort, other devotee is putting so less effort, and he has not even reached the state of Prema. He's like at Anartha Nivritti and Nishtha. And just the fact that, you know, he's alive in Krishna consciousness, he'll go back to world. Well, I mean, that sounds weird. It's kind of difficult to accept that. Because definitely the level of intensity of your absorption, at the state of Nishtha also, you are kind of distracted. You are not completely absorbed in Krishna. You have distractions. You are attached. You are attracted to the material nature, material world to some degree. I mean, to say that Nishtha is actually a 50% stage in the process. So you can you imagine? You know, you are 50% attached to the material world, 50% attached to the spiritual world. And obviously, prema is like 100%. You are spiritually, the entire body is spiritually conscious. It is spiritualized. So in that sense, you know, I just made a comment. I just thought that this probably, we have to probably speak about it, because it is not so easy also. And but it can become easy when we, when we fulfill the desire of the spiritual master. So that will compensate for the remaining stages. So you say that, okay, Nishtha, someone can go back to world, but they have the compensation factor, which is the mercy of the spiritual master. And that from Nishtha, one will promote it to prema, you know, in a short amount of time. That can happen. So this is the thing, you know, like we have to properly understand. And this is the safest part. So you know, to speak the spiritual master is actually the safest part. If you consider anything else as a foundation in your Krishna consciousness, apart from serving the spiritual master and trying to please the devotee, I think it will be very challenging and very tough, very difficult also, because you are on your own. And it will take long time. And there is no guarantee that you will be able to reach that stage. But this is a very safe path. Okay, this is a safe and sure path. And Krishna himself is mentioning in one of the Puranas, he says that, even if you worship me perfectly, there is no guarantee that you'll attain me. But if you worship my devotees, then even if your worship is not perfect, you will attain me. It is one of the Puranas which is mentioned. So this particular verse and the verse that Krishna says in the Vara Puran, that even if a devotee is not able to remember me at the time of death because of some kind of bodily disease or discomfort, then I will appear to the devotee and I will remember that devotee. So that's more than enough. Right? So these two verses, when we see, we can understand that, you know, when Krishna is willing to reciprocate in that way, that even if the devotee is not able to remember, so why will Krishna remember someone when he sees that this particular devotee has pleased my devotee very thoroughly, sufficiently pleased my devotee? So definitely that compassion or that compensation will come upon the devotee. Okay, so that will lead to that extra mercy that will compensate for the stages. Yeah, so this is the reason, you know, in people, devotees in ISKCON, they say that preaching is a shortcut. The more you preach, the more you please Prabhupada, the more mercy you get of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and that will compensate for other things. Yeah, so
right.
Any other devotees? You have any comment or question?
No problem.
Okay. But did anyone recollect what was the context of why I shared that story of Maharaj and Anandam Prabhu? I mean, maybe it was connected to the Guru extending himself for the disciple. Maybe I was speaking about surrender to Guru or pleasing the Guru and how the Guru reciprocates. In that, probably this context might have come up. Okay. Okay, so today we couldn't, actually we definitely have we have gone through Gaur Leela by speaking about Radhanath Maharaj and other devotees. So, you know, I mean, Maharaj is, if you see Maharaj mood, he is very much into Gaur Leela. because Maharaj, mostly, you know, he loves to speak about Gaur Leela. From the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, Chaitanya Mangal. Many of his classes, they always connect with Gaur Leela. So somehow by, I think, speaking about one of the devotees of Gauranga, I think we are also connected to Gaur Leela. It's not different.
Yes, Prabhu, definitely.
Yeah. Okay. One last thing I would like to mention is, actually, you see, personally speaking, yes, I mean, on Saturday itself, I was feeling that I think we should not, we should restrict, I mean, in the future, if we are hosting some senior disciple of Prabhupada or any senior devotee, I think we should restrict to our group only. I don't want to involve so many devotees. What do you think about it? Restrict to our group devotees and maybe a few others whom we can invite if we know them very well.
Yeah,
but not everyone. Not on an open forum like this. You know, there are like 100 plus devotees joining at one time, and it was like. So I have written this to Maharaj today only, that although obviously it was wonderful having him, hearing from him and associating with other devotees and also learning from them, but I think it's also important to focus on what is the purpose of doing this. So initially, you know, I felt that, okay, there may be maybe around 30-40 devotees might join. I didn't knew that, you know, so many devotees will join. So now, but I do realize that I think what we have to do is, we have to, whatever group study we are doing, I think we have to connect that with the devotee who is going to speak. And it should be restricted to our group only. And I think that will also allow our group devotees to have a personal conversation with the senior devotees. That will be more effective, I think.
Yes, Prabhuji. That's true.
Yeah. So, Nirvika, what do you think?
Prabhuji, whatever you're okay with, I think in like it has like both pros and cons. Like sometimes some questions might not come to our mind, but some questions might be asked by other devotees who are his disciples or any other devotee that could also be there. But I guess it's all just dependent on what majority of them want.
So I agree with you to a certain extent, but not completely, because when it is coming to asking questions from other devotees, what I feel is that if there are 100 devotees in the group, if someone is asking question, I think the answer will be short. Maharaj cannot go beyond a certain, like for example, even my question also I had to cut short. I had some other follow-up questions also. Plus, another thing is that I couldn't find complete answer to my question. Obviously, Maharaj ended by saying that, okay, we don't have to be bothered about it. And I think this is a common answer which I think most of the devotees would probably comment like that. So I had to definitely stop on that. And knowing that there are so many devotees, definitely would not sound good to further question him. So, yeah, it's true that we can get to know questions from others also, But I think the answers would be restricted and limited in terms of time. But when we are having a personal conversation or discussion with Maharaj, then I think and I think we don't have to do anything with other questions also, because everything has to be connected with the topic ultimately. I mean, you know, when I see the purpose of having this, hosting this program, I was lost. I was lost in the sense that, I mean, what is the difference between having an open program and hosting it from our end? I mean, there is no difference. I mean, this could have been arranged by some other devotee also, and we could have just joined. I mean, there are hundreds of programs going on online, and devotees can, they can just participate. So there is like nothing, I mean, unique about it. Okay, but when we are hosting from our end, that's why I said in the beginning that when we are hosting from our end, we have to make sure that our devotees get chance to ask questions. And if you have heard, I did mention that point that Maharaj, you know, we already have a list of questions from our devotees, and I think most of them are most of the devotees may have this question. So when I was trying to ask the third question, I think you know, Maharaj did interrupt and he asked me to you know, connect to someone who is live. So I think we have to connect the topic, connect our group study to the, you know, to what we are currently discussing, studying, or what we have learned. And we have to also get that kind of personal touch with, you know, I think all devotees must get that personal connection also. Otherwise, I don't think there is a need to host the program second time. I don't think that. I mean, any devotee from any part of the world can do it, and we can join it, and we can just hear it, and that's it. But so this is the, you know, uniqueness and speciality about connecting personally with someone. And so I've expressed my desire to Maharaj, and I've asked him if he's okay with that. So let's see what he responds. Anyways, but you know, the class by Maharaj will, I don't know when will happen next time. But I think what I've learned is that we have to restrict to our group. And another from another point of view, if you see, the disciples of Maharaj also, when they have a meeting, they don't invite any other devotees from outside. Especially when they have a meeting which is connected to a particular thing, they will not invite devotees from outside. Definitely they will not invite. So see, if it's a open class, like, you know, like a Leela class, or like a common topic, you know, the passing of devotees like that, then you understand that, okay, it's for meant for everyone. Everyone can participate and they can learn something. But when we are trying to learn Shastra and we are connected to some topic, then I think it is very important we stick to that particular thing, and we also restrict to our groups. Because then obviously others will divert the topic. They probably have questions or comments which may not be connected to our topic. Okay. And I, you know, regarding the questions, I think you don't have to worry, because I think myself and Rajiv Prabhu, we are, I think single-handedly we can handle, we are equivalent to around 1,000 people asking questions. So we will note down the most frequently asked questions and the most important questions.
That is not my forte. I will be asking silly questions. Don't compare me to you, Prabhuji.
Like
your PhD, I am
like, you know, in, no, like the way we say that, you know, Bhimsen was equivalent to 10,000 elephants. So here we can say that we both are equivalent to 1,000 devotees who ask questions only once, like that. Yeah, but I mean, yeah. We can, so that way, I'm thinking of hosting senior devotees once in a month. Okay, once in a month. And I will be primarily hosting my Siksha Gurus. Now, Siksha Gurus will definitely, you know, I don't know when it will happen, when once in a day of Brahma it can happen. I don't know that. Definitely we can try for it, but it's kind of difficult. currently. But definitely our Siksha Gurus are like, you know, my Siksha Gurus primarily, His Holiness Bhanu Swami Maharaj, His Holiness Shivram Maharaj, His Grace Mahatma Prabhu, His Grace Kalakanta Prabhu. So all these devotees, you know, they from, I have learned everything from them. And I am in the process of inviting Bhanu Maharaj next month. And he is, obviously, he is such a kind, such a compassionate and such a humble devotee that he is just amazing. So he is in Australia currently. And next month, you know, he may shift somewhere else. But because of the time zone, the difference, Australia is like 4.5 hours ahead of us. So we are just working on the schedule for the next month. And hopefully, if Maharaj, I mean, he has kind of accepted in one sense. He has not denied. So looking forward to his association next month. Let's hope for the best. And then obviously, it may be a bit difficult. Huh?
That will be very wonderful, Prabhuji.
Yeah, I mean, I do feel that now is the time that devotees, they also can be connected to senior Prabhupada disciples or senior devotees. And once in a month, we can do this so that you also can hear from them. You can learn from them. You'll also get to understand a lot of things. What is the variety also, you know, amongst all these God brothers. And yeah, so I'm definitely trying for that. I'm not sure about Shivram Maharaj. Maybe that it may be difficult for, I think, let's see, I will try for that also. And but definitely Mahatma Prabhu and Kalakanta Prabhu also I'll be inviting. So this is my goal. Let's see.
Okay, brother.
Okay, all right. Yeah, so I think, but one thing we agree that unanimously, I spoke with Aritra also Saturday night after the class, and he also, actually he also questioned me that, Prabhuji, you know, I mean, I thought that this is for our group. So how come, you know, there were so many devotees? And I told him that I completely agree with you. You know, I also felt the same thing. And I think unanimously we all agree that we definitely would want a you know, private thing rather than a very open thing. So I will make sure not to post it on Facebook and not to make it a very open thing next time. So hopefully we get some more personal time with these wonderful advanced Vaishnavas.
Okay, Prabhuji.
Okay, all right. So thank you all the devotees for joining. Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhuji.
Pranam to everyone.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhuji. Pranam.